tickets over 3 years old. All my best toys are pawned and sold. Now I have misplaced my truck, and I've just had a little tough luck. I have got some priorities, they're not my responsibilities. So don't come asking me for rent, for my cash is already spent. Worry not, for I will bounce a check to get my landlord off my neck for now. Do you think I could hurt you with my irresponsible virtue? Even though sometimes it just adds to my woes, I prefer staying on my toes, on my toes, on my toes, on my toes. All I can say is that it's fun to be irresponsible, but you tend to pay the price, tend not to care.
Da Idade Média.
Dance, dance, dance.
pra não morrer de fome. Agora é moda chauvinista pra ser homem. Agora é moda ter vocação pra ser famoso. Agora é moda saber que dói, mas é gostoso.
Dance, 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 dance.
Agora é moda economizar a gasolina. E cara de menina.
Agora é moda
tentar salvar a natureza.
Agora é moda
achar que tudo é uma pobreza.
Dance, 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 dance.
Dance.
It's the Quails.
We're totally embarrassed, but you are listening to KYRSLP Spokane.
Dig it.
Thanks, really. Thanks. Thanks.
Pero mano caliente, poderoso bongocero, daba ritmo al barrio entero y la gente preguntaba cuando lo veían llegar. Dime entero, si trae la mano caliente, dime entero, si trae la mano caliente. Y él de broma le decía, cuando afinaba los cueros, el caliente es lo de menos porque yo soy entero. Porque yo soy entero. Oye, llegó la rumba, rumbero.
La mano caliente.
Y a mí me llaman el rey de los cueros.
La mano caliente.
Que sigue, sígueme, que sigue el party de cuero.
La mano caliente,
caliente, caliente, calientito a ti, artero.
La mano caliente, artero.
La rumba es pa' los rumberos.
La mano caliente, artero.
Mete mano, mete mano, mete mano, rumbero.
La mano caliente,
artero. 800 bongoceros y yo en el medio. la la, a la 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 la, a la 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 la.
KYRS LP Spokane FM 92.3 and 89.9 www.kyrs.org 509-747-3807. Welcome to Tech Talk with Hawk. Tech Talk with Hawk is a weekly talk show discussing topics related to technology and its impact on your privacy, security, and civil rights. Content and or views, opinions, and conclusions expressed on Tech Talk with Hawk by the host, co-host, or guest do not necessarily reflect those of KYRS, the Nair Radio, LPFM, nor those of the station's staff or management. The show host is not a lawyer, and the opinions expressed by the show host, co-host, or guests are not to be construed as legal advice.
The opinions and conclusions expressed by the host, co-host, or guest should in no way be construed as an endorsement to purchase any product or service, nor are they intended to discourage anyone from buying any product or service or deprive any company of its lawful income. Furthermore, such opinions and conclusions are not intended to support, induce, or condone any activity that might violate local, state, federal, or international laws. The host, co-host, and guests have no liability to any listener or entity deprived from any alleged loss or damage arising from the use or misuse of the information provided during this show, including damage to computers, sustained systems, equipment, accessories, injury, or any other problems or adverse situations directly or indirectly resulting from the show's content. This show makes no guarantees stated or implied regarding the validity of the information discussed on this show. While the show host makes an effort to ensure the information discussed is accurate, the host, co-host, and guests will not be held liable for errors, inaccuracies, omissions, improper use of information presented, or any violations of any law which may occur as a result of utilizing the information from the show or any inconsistency therein.
Has been working with computers and information technology since 1981. He has extensive experience with and has been certified in many technologies over the years, including but not limited to Microsoft, Novell, Sun, Java, Linux, databases, Oracle, information security, application servers, web servers, and many, many other technologies. He has worked as a software developer in many programming languages, worked in most of the areas of the information technology industry, from lowly technical support and custom personal computer systems builder to database administrator, network administrator, systems administrator, computer technician building thousands of systems by hand, webmaster, physical and information security specialist, research and development computer scientist to the pinnacles of Chief Information Officer and Chief Technology Officer. Hawk has worked for tiny mom-and-pop companies to large corporations with tens of thousands of systems. He has been published and certified as an Information Security Incident Handler by the SANS Institute, an institution focusing on information security originally founded by the NSA and the FBI. The goal of this show is to enlighten and inform the general public about technologies that do have an impact on everyone, and try to break the terms down as best as possible to be understood by most listeners. If any topic covered goes by too quickly, or needs to be explained in more detail, please do not hesitate to call in to the studio during show broadcast hours. That's Sundays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time. You may call in the United States, 509-747-3807. You may also contact the show host during show broadcasts through instant messaging and internet relay chat by going to the website www.techtalkhawk.com, or during any time you may email hawk at techtalkhawk.com. You may also download show archives, find links and addendum information, as well as post questions at the website www.techtalkhawk.com. That's TechTalkHawke.com. And now, your host, Hawk.
Yes, welcome to Tech Talk with Hawk, broadcasting from the KYRS studios right here in downtown Spokane, Washington, in the community building on 35 West Main. on FM 89.9, 92.3, and streaming over the web at www.kyrs.org. You can also download show archives and podcasts from my site at techtalkhawk.com. Also, just to let you know, I got up and running for today's show, the webcam. So if you want to check out my ugly mug in action, you can swing on by the kyrs.org website. In the left-hand navigation menu down at the bottom of it, you will see a little link for webcam. You click that, and you'll see an option to view either with Java or ActiveX. Choose your poison. Click on that, and you'll be able to view it real-time and see the webcam. So swing on by there if you would like. But fair warning, be sure to don peril-sensitive sunglasses before viewing my ugly mug. Anyhow, that aside, let you know a little bit about what the show is about if you haven't caught it before. Try to talk about technology and specifically how it applies and affects everyone related to privacy, security, and civil rights. So I'm not here trying to sell you any products or services, etc. I try to make you aware and use information to help you on a path towards enlightenment. And also for safety and security, and try to protect your privacy out there. So to get started, let a quick status update on the Internet Weather Report from the SANS Institute at ISC, that's internetstormcenter.sans.org. Right now they're reporting a condition green, not a whole lot of exceptional activity, just the usual storms of attacks, etc., going on out there. But nothing really standing out as far as high levels of traffic. A few security items of note to be aware of. Just this past Tuesday, Microsoft put out their once monthly update packs. And so you might want to check and make sure your updates have been run on all your Windows systems. A number of the issues are quite serious. There's about a dozen, a lot more than a dozen patches, but there's a dozen main critical areas, and several of them are extremely hazardous to your computer's health and your privacy, including Internet Explorer exploits out there that make it possible to completely remotely execute whatever code they want on your system, multiple vulnerabilities. They have three fixes for that. Office has two fixes, again, and it's being actively exploited, known since February 2nd of this month, or of this year. And it looks like, oh, there's some from December 5th they finally got around to fixing as well for Office. A few others that they know are critical, but they're not aware of any existing exploits. And a number of others that they are aware. Well, some operating system stuff. ActiveX, there's a vulnerability that has been vulnerable. They rate it critical, and it's been vulnerable since October 24th through ActiveX, and they finally got around to fixing it this week. So definitely get those updates. Oh, there's also one through HTML and ActiveX, but they're proactive on that one. They think they caught it before anybody else knew, so that's good. So definitely get those updates running. A lot of people now have their automatic updates turned off because sometimes Microsoft will push an update that would screw up your computer and then the day after have a different update, but you couldn't get the update because your computer was offline. So a lot of people have been turning off the automatic update aspect of it. So make sure you do the updates. Let's see, what else do we have here? Well, not to just pick on Microsoft, Apple also just released some security updates as well. Reading a little bit about some of the OS X viruses and such. Not too many of them, but there's a few out there. They released some security updates just yesterday for OS X version 10.3.9 and 10.4.8, including the server. And it allows various attacks against your system. Some of the main ones are through iChat and AIM, but also even just through mounting drives and some user notification that's allowing escalation. So, Mac users, OS X users, get your updates, get them while they're hot.
And who else needs updates? Well, you know, Linux World, of course, they've got plenty going on there. Something a little unusual, you Palm Treo OS users. Yes, you Palm handheld users. There is a security issue to be aware of. Users with physical access to your system are able to use the Find feature to locate data even when the device is locked. So keep that in mind, Palm Treo users, Treo, however you want to say it. Just because you've locked it doesn't mean your files are safe. They do not currently yet have a fix. They're working on it, but it's not available yet. So be careful, Palm Treo users. And also, all attention, all broadband users. If you have a broadband internet connection, whether it's cable, DSL, wireless, what have you, you should pay attention to this notification. Some of you are probably already aware of this, but there's a especially heavy attack series going on right now. They're calling it drive-by farming with a PH, PHARMING. They seem to love to mess with things like phishing with PH and things like that, and freaking, etc. Well, what's happening is there's an attack that you go to a website and it runs a JavaScript program in your browser, and it basically hijacks your broadband modem and makes it so that they can control your DNS so that you think you're going to your bank's website when in fact you're actually going to a mock-up that they've made, and they're intercepting all of your login, your account information, etc. There's a simple way to prevent this from happening. Change the default password on your broadband router. I don't know how many times I've seen people that they just plug it in and let it run the way it is out of the box. Well, those passwords are published. They're publicly available on your DSL modem, your cable modem, your firewall, your wireless access point, any of those networking devices that you buy that are more than just a little hub. If it's a router or a bridge or an access point, change the passwords for please, pity's sake. Because basically the way the script works is it's able to detect what device you're running, and then it looks up a database of known passwords for those devices, and then it logs in, and then it hijacks your entire broadband connection and then redirects all of your traffic through the hackers, and you don't realize it's going on the whole time. So, again, please change your default password on your broadband connection. And hello, Randy. Welcome. Glad you can make it. Randy's here. He's, is that what you're looking for? Was the microphone? Sorry, I had it way up there. I was moving things around. I got the webcam up and running. Excellent. Right up here. So I warned everybody that if they want to check out our ugly mugs, to be sure to don peril-sensitive sunglasses first. I don't know. Are you familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Either the books or the movie?
I've heard of them. I don't think I've...
Actually, the movie didn't even show it. Well, so anyway, the peril-sensitive sunglasses are glasses that you put on that are clear when everything's fine. But when you're in imminent danger, they suddenly go completely black and opaque so you can't see what's about to slay you. So they're peril-sensitive rather than ultraviolet-sensitive sunglasses. And I have ultraviolet-sensitive sunglasses right here, so these change, so anyway. So you might want to don those before viewing the webcam, at least my ugly mug. So, you know, Randy here, no worries.
Thank you.
He's got the nice distinguished businessman look and everything. And so I was just telling him about everybody needs to change their default passwords on their broadband routers because there's now hackers making use of it where if you go to certain sites, there's a JavaScript app that runs that will basically check and log into your broadband router through your computer, and if you haven't changed your default password, it'll hijack your settings, reroute all your DNS, which is how you look up websites, mm-hmm. and you'll end up being redirected to all the hackers' mock-ups of sites. And that way, when you go to your bank account and you log in, you're logged in, but the form just sent all the information to the hackers.
Really? So you're talking about the password that when you plug it in,
yeah,
Linksys for
Linksys. Right, Linksys and wireless and Netgear and all of those devices, a D-Link, any of those devices, or even if the ISP sent it to you, they have a default password that's published. Everybody knows what the default passwords are. So change it. If you have any doubts about whether you changed it, log in right now to your broadband monitor. As soon as you get home, check it. And if it's the default, change it.
So you can do this with a modem as well as a router?
Yeah, modem, router, they're kind of used interchangeably nowadays. Anything that's a broadband connection, whether it's modem, router, browser, bridge, access point, they're all vulnerable because it will detect the device that you're going through and hijack it.
I knew you could do that with the router. I didn't know you could do it with the modem.
And you know what? It'd probably help if I turned on your microphone. I don't know how well they could hear you, but you can probably hear you a lot better now, yeah.
And did you tell them to hide the name? I know on a router, at least, you can hide the name of the router, like wireless, if it's a wireless.
Well, with wireless, you can turn off what's known as broadcasting your SSID.
That's a good idea, too, right?
Yeah, I do that on mine. And that definitely helps because what happens is, then, like, for example, when you have Windows XP or something like that, it automatically detects networks, right? And it says, here's these networks to connect to. What would you like to connect to? Well, if you turn off the broadcast SSID or just broadcasting, then it will not show up in the list of networks to connect to. So that right there, it's called security through obscurity, and it's the lowest as in the least secure approach to things. Microsoft believes strongly, actually most closed source companies believe strongly in security through obscurity. They believe that if you don't know what you don't know, you won't think to look. Alas, it doesn't work that way. But it does help a little bit. It gets rid of some of the script kiddies and some of the lazier of the troublemakers.
Your neighbors, maybe.
Yeah, and even in people who really aren't meaning to do any harm, but they might just because it's there hop on. Right. And also it stops accidental stuff. Like, I got really annoyed. Neighbor had his wireless running with no encryption, and my wife's Windows, when she was running Windows, would keep switching over to his network.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop it. You know, and I had to change it to preferred network and all this. And right. Then Microsoft would do an update and it would change the preferences, you know, and I'd be like, I have to go back and change it again because you keep running through his network. And she'd wonder why it would get a little flaky and stuff. So please change the password. We can talk about wireless security. Actually, one of my earlier shows, I went into pretty good depth about Wi-Fi and how to secure it. One of my businesses that I built and sold years ago was a wireless broadband ISP to rural areas. We were self-contained solar power. We were working at wind power too, but self-contained little tower unit. The idea was to franchise it out that you could set up and it'd cover about an 8 mile by 8 mile, 12 mile area with about T1 speed, and you could be driving and be connected as well as to homes. And that was a lot of fun. But we also did it, and the big challenge was it was weather. It's like, that's not a big deal to do down in Phoenix or something where you have sun all the time and the weather's pretty much the same, except for during the monsoons. But this was in southern Idaho where in the winter it was 20 below and 3 feet of snow and, you know, only a few hours of gloomy sunlight. And in the summer it was 112, you know, so the equipment was baking and it was an interesting challenge, but we overcame it, and a lot of other ISPs started using, because I shared it with the other ISPs and started using some of the ideas we implemented. So I can dedicate a whole show to the wireless stuff sometime down the road, maybe again. Meanwhile, I was just going over different vulnerability news. So that was one of them, was talking about the broadband routers and change your password. Do I need to say that anymore? I think I've covered it. All right. Another Microsoft Word Zero Day appears. Okay, so Tuesday, Microsoft came out with all their updates, including Vista. There's a fix for Vista already. Yesterday, another zero day has come out for Microsoft Word. And in fact, a lot of the fixes that came out this week on Tuesday didn't fix some stuff that have been there for 8 months still. They only fixed some of them. So this is another vulnerability. It's the 9th in the Office suite. It affects Office 2000 and XP. And they've got some reports about what it's done. And they're targeting specific companies and organizations. Again, zero day means that it's just come out. They don't have any fixes yet. They're not quite sure how it works. There's no antivirus against it. And everybody's wide open right now. So be really careful opening Microsoft. The advice they give is use caution opening Microsoft Office documents from unknown sources and consider alternatives to help mitigate the threats in the interim. And that's coming from securityfocus.com. It's a security site. So they go into some technical details about it. I'm not going to get into the show, but it's just general information. Watch out. There's yet another one in Word. Basically, you'll run it and it'll execute something on your computer that you don't want it to run just by opening the Word document. And none of the antivirus programs right now will detect it because it's zero day. All right, that's some of the internet. That's done. Finished with the internet weather report. Now for some headlines. I love this one. This is great. This reminds me of the 80s when it used to be when hacking was still brand new as far as it became, you know, the computer criminal. We talked about in other shows about the difference between a hacker and a computer criminal, but now that they've become synonymous with each other. So the Chinese caught the six individuals, or at least one of the six people who wrote the Panda virus that's been going around, nailing systems. Well, the Chinese government is forcing one of the hackers who created and sold the worm to create a seek and destroy fix to eradicate it.
Nice.
I could just imagine him sitting there at the keyboard with like a gun to his head while he's, you know, typing. Yeah, you know, sweat dripping down. He's like, no, this will work. I swear it'll work. So they're putting the hackers to work in a little bit different way than we do here in the United States. The United States, what would happen is they would catch you and they'd say, well, we got you. It's kind of like in The Matrix where they catch Neo, the main character, and they've got him in the little boxed room, and they go through this file and they show all his computers and they says, and you've broken every computer crime we have a law for, right? And you see Neo just roll his eyes and go, oh crap, I'm so busted, you know, as they go, and you even help the landlady take out the garbage. Busted. Says, we'd like to make you an offer. And he slides it over and says, we'll wipe the slate clean. Offer you a deal. Now, it goes differently from there. But in the 80s, when you'd get busted, if you were really good, they would offer you a deal. Instead of going to the federal pen for at least 20 years, if not the rest of your life, they would offer for you to have a job. You would work for them, and you would be under probation, parole, whatever you want to call it, depending upon the level of severity of the crime. And you would work for them. Kevin Mitnick, one of the most famous of hackers, had such a deal, and he ended up hacking while working for them. That's I want to do a show on Mitnick one of these times, because there's a lot of fault stories about him, too. But about 10 years, well, at least 6 years, there were stickers everywhere saying, Free Kevin. Free Kevin, because he was held for at least 4 years without being charged, because they didn't know what to do, because they couldn't prove a lot of the stuff he did, even though they knew he did it. Mm-hmm. And this was back in the early 90s when the computer crimes were still pretty new, and the federal government just didn't know what to do with them, so they literally just violated all his rights to due process and sat on him until eventually they kind of said time served, put on probation, and I should do a show on that, clear up a lot of the stories about that. But anyway, so the Chinese have a little bit different approach. They put him to work to go clean up their mess. Kind of their doing a little bit of their civil duty here to go back. But there's a slight problem. It makes me nervous that they're doing it that way, because unless, like, maybe the guy holding the gun to his head maybe is a really good programmer, and so he can watch the code being written. But how do they know he's not just, like, writing another back door with the fix, you know? I mean, what's to stop him from writing something that pretends to be a fix? Oh, okay, I'll run this. And actually, it's like opening up some hidden back door that, you know, in 2 years will open up or something when he feels he's safe. You don't know.
Yeah.
You have no way of knowing. And there are a number of instances where some of these supposedly reformed hackers turned out to still be hacking while they worked for the feds. Really? Kevin Mitnick's one of them. I mean, he was on America's Most Wanted and such after he had worked for them. And then he hacked, and they started to catch on to him, and he disappeared.
Wow.
And they, for years, were trying to find him. And meanwhile, he continued just, oh, man. Great story. I mean, yeah, they did, yeah. And now he's a security consultant. Anyway, I should do that. I should make a show on Mitnick. I think people would find that entertaining. Oh, maybe call him and see if he wants to be.
Yeah, good idea.
Who knows? You never know. Clear up his good name. All right. So anyway, so that was a little interesting twist there. I thought people would find interesting. This one's a little scarier. Missing FBI laptops, still a problem. 3 or 4 FBI laptop computers are lost or stolen each month. 160 laptops lost or stolen over a 44-month period in the latest update. 5 years ago, and so they're saying, well, we're doing better. We're doing a lot better than we were like 5 years ago. 5 years ago, the inspector general said 354 weapons and 317 laptop computers were lost or stolen during a 28-month period. And about 10 of those laptops had like classified high level information on them, and then all the others were like lesser level, but still.
When stuff's encrypted, you know, with the can somebody get into it?
Encryption is just a matter of time.
Yeah.
You can always break encryption with enough processing power and time, which remind me to talk to you about quantum computing in just a little bit, because that will change the whole dynamic. So a new report found, so the report said about there were about 160 weapons were lost or stolen during 44-month period as well. So actually, I think I got that number mixed up. Let me double check that, because that's a redundant number, and that's not what I remember reading in the article. You know, I was copying and pasting some of my notes, and I think I copied the same number twice. So 160 weapons, and 160 laptops. Oh, equal numbers. So I wonder if it was like the same people lost their gun and their laptop together.
That is how many agents were lost during
that's
the
true. Maybe were there 160 agents? They were all down in Iraq or something.
That the CIA's to blame.
Right, right. anyway, so that's the good old Federal Bureau of Investigations there doing it. I've talked a little bit about that because I've had to work with them a little bit when I used to do security consulting. And I would submit reports to them, which were like a bloody fingerprint with DNA evidence in the digital equivalent of that. And all they need to do is just serve a warrant to the ISP, and they would know exactly which house to go to, and then they would have proof on the computer, because I tracked it down to that level, that computer was used, when it was used, etc. And then they could, you know, have their investigation, they could deal with the hacker, the computer criminal. And I would turn in these reports, and they would contact me back saying, what does this mean? They'd be like, and they told me, they said, well, we're still working on it right now, we're only set up to handle kiddie porn. We can deal with going after kiddie porn, but really don't know what to do with the cyber criminals. And even the head of the FBI back around 2001 or 2 or 3 around there said, we're about 6 years behind in training and technology and equipment. 6 years in technology is a long time behind.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, sounds like they're getting better a little bit. At least they're stopping losing as much equipment as before.
I'm sure that's a funding issue, huh?
Wish them luck there. I'm sure they're tuned in now that I've mentioned them about 7 times in the last 5 minutes.
Do you think they have a little, I suppose it's possible. Do they, you know how they search email for certain words?
Right, what was the name? They keep changing the name of the program because they'll get the program told you can't use that program anymore. So they'll just change it to a different name. And it's like, okay, we're using a different program now.
Can they do the same thing with, I suppose radio?
The NSA can. The NSA does it. They have computers that are able to listen for keywords and such.
In radio
communication. And then I'll trigger recording. It'll flag it. All communication.
Wow.
Whether it's radio or digital, analog, you know, it's just, I mean, they literally sit there. There's a number of books out that the NSA have tried to suppress, that really go into a lot of detail about how the whole process works and how big companies have worked with them. Like AT&T, clear back to World War II, was letting them tap in to everybody's communications freely without any remorse about it. And that's continued to happen on and off, even when laws have been passed against it. So it's unfortunate. Top 10 Big Brother companies, speaking of all of this, of the listening, ranking the worst consumer privacy infringers. Now, this was from businessintelligencelowdown.com. You know, I don't fully agree with who they pick as the targets in this. I'd say only about a third of them I agree with. I do agree that these are all potential issues for privacy, but I don't think the article really proves that they're guilty on all of them. But some of them they do. So the top 10 that they list are Response Unlimited, LexisNexis, America Online, Amazon.com, Yahoo, Microsoft, Accenture, Axiom, Google, and ChoicePoint. Now, again, some of them they just claim basically because that all this information is being taken, they're Big Brother. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's a huge risk per se. It certainly increases the chance of risk because if they have that data, if that data gets compromised, you know, now all that like happened with the VA hospitals,
right. The
millions of Social Security numbers and such that were compromised. So the more they have, they are at greater risk. That doesn't necessarily mean that they have violated, and they may have good security practices to prevent it. And some of the ones they name, I wouldn't agree with, like, the ranking they give them and such, as far as being Big Brother, per se. This, number 10, for Response Unlimited, they say it's a large marketing firm, and they received authorization to sell a list of Terry Schiavo's financial contributors to other companies as sales leads. So, that's unfortunate, but I don't know if that puts them in the top 10 of privacy violations. But apparently a lot of people, you know, started getting spammed in telemarketing and all of that around that. It's just really tacky. LexisNexis. Now, I've worked with, I've had to support law firms and companies like that where they, LexisNexis is their lifeblood. And normally I would say, why is LexisNexis on here? They had generally fairly reasonable security processes, at least back when I was dealing with it in the late 90s. Well, okay, so they have a huge database. They basically store everything about all kinds of information, and they even keep a lot of information. I didn't realize they had this much information on just about every person in the United States with their mailing address, millions of records on everybody. Well, what's bad is in July of 2005, the system, the LexisNexis security system, was compromised, and about 300,000 records were stolen by computer criminals. So it makes about one of the top some of the top largest data heists ever, unfortunately. So I can see why they put LexisNexis in the top 10 there, because that's pretty bad, and they do have a huge database. America Online, yeah, there's a lot of issues there. They definitely don't hesitate to turn their data over to marketing, you know, especially since you know, they've been owned on and off by different media consortiums and such. Additionally, their instant messaging, they definitely have not had good practices in protecting people's privacy at all. In addition to their software, has a tendency, at least a lot of times, to hose the system. It screws up networking and causes all sorts of other problems. I remember a lot of systems came in that they were complaining about how flaky it was. All we had to do was uninstall America Online, and boom, it ran much better. They didn't have any internet, but it ran a lot better, you know. And our advice was, get a different ISP, you know. So they're dealing with lawsuits, and they just aren't very careful, and they're pretty happy to share their... Basically, anything you do through their system, you basically agree that they're going to share with all their marketing partners, and AOL has a lot of marketing partners. So you are basically saying, yeah, to use AOL, I'm agreeing to have no privacy in my browsing habits, downloading habits, email habits. It's all an open book. That's okay. If you're an AOL user and you're okay with that, then great, enjoy, but you should be aware that that's what you're doing. Amazon.com. You know, this one, I don't remember if they gave it, there's a capability, they have a lot of capability, they have all these purchases and everything else, and yeah, they certainly have their partnerships and everything, and they want to make money from that database, I get that, but I haven't seen them be as bad as some other companies I've seen. I mean... They definitely, if you agree to have your stuff tracked and you get paid to, you know, you get benefits for agreeing to have everything tracked, you get tracked. But I've seen a lot worse. And Amazon hasn't exactly been, I mean, they don't cite any security issues as far as the database being hacked into. I mean, I would think anybody would know at this point that if you buy stuff online through any major company, they're going to share your information with partners. I mean, their privacy policy will probably say that. If you don't want your purchasing habits shared, then you're going to have to go with some small-time vendor or some such. Otherwise, it's just going to happen. That is the way of it. But try to pick somebody who at least doesn't have a history of being hacked into. You know, so at least it doesn't go too far. And of course, you can always just go to the flea market and pay cash if you really want to be secure. You know? You won't know what you're getting, and I bet warranty will be a problem there. But And I doubt it'll be delivery to the door. But anyway, so listing Amazon.com as one of the top 10 Big Brothers, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, they didn't list eBay in this top 10, and they've got PayPal and all of those, and they have a huge database. Right. I don't know. Yahoo, they also list because they have a huge database as well. But again, they don't list any specific issues with being compromised. Microsoft. Okay, I'm going to have to agree. I don't know about the ranking. Microsoft, A, has a huge database. B, has repeatedly had their systems compromised over the years. They have a bad track record of keeping their data secure. C, they're really invasive about how they get your data. When you run Microsoft and you run Microsoft Office, usually with it, it will keep copies of every document you ever view or make. It will keep a log of every website you ever go to. It can even keep small, miniature, compressed versions of the sites you go to, sans images and such. Keeps all of this stored in some hidden directories, compressed, so that if there's a forensics that needs to be done, I can go in there and see everything you've ever done with that computer since it was wiped. It's all saved there. But additionally, it's constantly reporting back on your, it sends reports back to Microsoft on your habits, on how often you use your email, how often you use your Word, how often you use Excel, what kind of documents you use, what features you use, etc. And Microsoft says it's ostensibly to help provide a better user experience. I'm not going to get into all of that, but there's definitely a huge security privacy issue there. The privacy part being just that they're keeping track of everything, and they keep copying your system, which means somebody else could snag that off your system. And B, the security aspect, and then unfortunately they don't have a good track record. They've been hacked multiple times. They have a poor track record of protecting that data. They've had compromises of their own source code, you know, as recently as just a couple of years ago. So that definitely would put them in the top 10. Accenture, they're saying here is the fourth largest. They turned over digital dossiers for a $10 billion contract to the United States Department of Homeland Security to build a surveillance system that tracks visitors to, from, and within the United States. And it has extensive database of fingerprints and photographs of all visa waiver travelers and non-naturalized U.S. residents. They're also experimenting in biometrics like iris and facial recognition. So they're creating a huge, huge... Not only do they know your credit history and previous court dates, even if it's only jury duty, but they even know what you look like. And they're happy to hand it over. So that's definitely a big privacy issue. Axiom has a huge resource of addresses and telephone numbers specifically stored for telemarketers and mass mailers. So this is a spam-providing company. They help the spammers get your info. And they basically go to, like, other companies, like Accenture and all the others, to try to get the information, then turn around and sell it as big lumps. They have records on millions of Americans, including drug tests and criminal histories, education data, and the popular suspected terrorist watch list available at a premium price. So they're saying it's to help employers weed out untruthful applicants and illegal employees, but it can just be used also for advertising. Having problem with your probation officer? Contact us and we'll take care of it for you. Get some spam from the Russian mafia or something there, you know. Google, they put Google at number 2. Now, Google certainly, I understand, I mean, they are a huge aggregator of data. That is their purpose. That is, it's their purpose that defines them. It's the purpose that drives them. It's why they exist, is to be a data acquisition. But they cite, they give a really bad example. They say one of the things is that they set your cookie to expire in 30 years. So what? You know, now cookies can be used to track in that if you go to a different site, that site will check to see if an existing cookie is already there, and if it is there, it knows that you came from that network, and it'll try to leave its own cookie. But it's not the same thing as, like, a virus or a Trojan or something else that's taking over your system. It is a way of tracking you. It certainly can be used to track you, but it's easy enough to turn off. If your privacy is concerned, turn off those cookies or make it so the cookies expire. You can force the cookies to expire no matter what they set them to from the website. So the example they give is not a very good reason, other than just saying it's a huge database. Google's one of the companies that stood up when there was the subpoena to hand over searching. Remember, I think it was just last year, the government, federal government, to try to prove some case against some people for pornography, child pornography, subpoenaed Yahoo, Google, MSN, AOL, all of them for search engine results. But they didn't do it for, like, one account. They did it for everybody because they were trying to prove some general point. So they subpoenaed millions of accounts. And just about everybody but Google said, yeah, here you go. Handed over all of our browsing search engine history and what we search, what engines we search, what search topics we search under, etc., and the links we followed. Google actually stood up to it. So I'm like, I don't know. They certainly don't deserve to be number two. I think there's a lot worse people out there as far as violating privacy and security and such. ChoicePoint, a marketing conglomerate, they put as number one and say that it wins their coveted George Orwell, as in 1984, award. Most likely to be watching you right now. ChoicePoint maintains more than 17 billion records on 220 million people, and we have about 300 million here in the United States, with topics ranging from social security numbers to DNA samples. The majority of ChoicePoint's information is sold to the highest bidder, which more often than not happens to be a representative of the United States government, a leading American company, or a Nigerian fraud group. So they really don't discern who they give the information out to. It just goes to the highest bidder. In addition to their willingness to sell private information to questionable sources, another factor that makes ChoicePoint the biggest privacy threat is the company's failure to provide a high level of data security. They announced in 2005 that approximately 160,000 users in their database had various forms of sensitive information compromised. It resulted in more than 750 cases of full-blown identity theft. So that wasn't a potential risk. That was the risk realized in full, and 750 people's lives were ruined. Because when you have identity theft to that scale, you may never recover, and it'll take at least 10 or 20 years to build your credit back up. And you know, people lose houses, lose cars, lose jobs. Really bad things happen when you get that level of identity theft. So it's companies like that I would say put in the top 10. ChoicePoint and one of the two or the others that have been compromised and have data, and especially ChoicePoint not having any morals of either the Nigerian fraud group for the Nigerian. Holy moly, those should be the groups that are in the top 10. Yeah, Microsoft, Amazon, all of them, they're a risk. But I don't think they have the same level. I mean, that's malicious behavior right there. That's just, if you know you're handed it over to a group like that, I mean, there's just no excuse for that. So anyway, that was an interesting topic that people would find of use there. Here's one that this is a great topic. As usual, I won't get to everything I want to get to, but I'm getting further along than usual. And you got to remember to interrupt me. Interrupt me. Ask questions.
I'm trying.
We'll just jump in. Maybe stop. Hold up a hand. Go.
Take your mic away.
Tap me in the... Yeah, there you go. No way, man. All right. OLPC. One laptop per child project. This is pretty neat. And I have a magazine article here. I was reading about this a while ago, actually a few weeks ago. In fact, I actually bought this over at CompUSA right over there. When I was sitting there waiting in line while you're taking care of some customers there. And... it's called Progress Toward the Hackable Kid Top, and it's a little kid laptop first of all, you should know that Bill Gates and Intel, specifically Bill Gates and Microsoft, and then Intel, I forget who in Intel, if it was president or not, are naysaying this whole project. But they're only naysaying it now that what happened is originally Microsoft was trying to get Windows CE to run on this little kid's laptop. But they were rejected and said it's running Linux. And I believe instead of Intel, it's running the AMD processor as well. So, you know, now all of a sudden they're naysaying the whole project, saying it's not viable, it's a waste of money. What this project aims to do is they're trying to get laptops for every child in the world, especially, you know, very underdeveloped countries. And so they're trying to get the price point to where it's a fully functional laptop, it's rugged, you know, for children and for a rough environment, and it's only $100. This is a $100 laptop, color with Wi-Fi, ruggedized, and even there's an attachment for like a foot crank. They used to have a hand crank, now it's a foot crank, so it can be self-powered. So you can run it if you don't have electricity, but run off of a wireless grid, because there's a lot of places in Africa and stuff where they don't have electricity, but they've got Wi-Fi now. I was talking about a couple shows back about it when I was doing the Linux update around the world. An entire town there did an entire Wi-Fi grid in 1 year. They went from nothing to all of a sudden they're like a technology hub, all because of one of the Linux guys was out there talking, and one person was inspired, and he got money, and the place turned around, and there's a 12-year-old who by now is about 14 years old who's now helping Linus Torvalds working on the kernel of Linux. He's like 14 years old, writing code for the kernel of Linux from Africa, and 2 years before, he'd never even seen a computer. Wow. So this is literally changing lives. And so it's OLPC is the acronym they've been using for it. And it's cute. I mean, look at that. You know, they're doing it in either bright orange or bright green, you know, kid little colors, you know, the ugly neon colors that they seem to think kids want for some reason. I don't know why. I know babies like bright colors, but anyhow, so it has, so there's a bunch of them. So the update on this is that, let's see, there were some numbers here that they're going to roll it out. Oh, where did it go? Should have taken a little bit better notes on the specific topic, so just linking to it. We're talking millions of laptops here. This project, Google's, I think, contributing $10 or $20 million to the project just as a starter, as well as many other companies are contributing. And so you can see why Gates and Intel would be a little upset if, you know, the majority of the population out there, because that's still the majority, is not connected, is not electronic. And the goal is to push these out to Latin America, Eastern Europe, China, India, all over, and get everybody connected and part of this internet world, this technology world, and not be left behind, and have more opportunities, and give these people a chance by giving it. And again, has Linux on it. So we're talking millions of installations here rolling out. So that's just a little bit of an example. Now, a close parallel, excuse me, is Brazil has a similar project along the same lines. It's not the same project, but I'm actually finding projects like this all over the place. So there's the main One Laptop Per Child project, OLPC, it said laptop.org. And so there's that main project, but then there's a lot of other countries just kind of doing the same thing on their own. So Brazil, in conjunction with a number of companies and government-owned companies, is doing the same thing again with Linux. They have already delivered 50,000 desktops and are working on, let's see, how many do they estimate that they were going to do here? A monthly deployment of 10,000 desktops per month are rolling out in Brazil. Again, and the name of their project was Computer for All, Computers for All, the Brazilian federal government project, Computers for All program. So those are some neat parallels going on there that I thought was pretty interesting. Are there any questions about all that so far?
No. I mean, yeah, there's some questions, but I don't think we're going to have time to get into it.
Okay. Well,
there's a lot of stuff.
I know. There's so much going on. It's like, Steve Jobs has been calling for no more digital rights management on music. He put up a big manifesto last week, I think, earlier this week or last week. It's all a blur. And saying, you know, I don't think DRM is really a good idea, guys, to the media industry. He's saying this is Recording Industry Association of America, Motion Picture Association of America. And of course, they're like, you're out of your mind. We have to have it. We have to stop the piracy bubble. And he's like, no, this is actually hurting your industry. If you would let this DRM requirement go, you would make money, more money hand over fist. But you're being so uptight about this, you're actually hurting yourselves. And so Steve Jobs, you know, Apple, iTunes, is actually now saying, you know, I really wish we weren't doing DRM. He can't really get out of it right now, because unless he can convince the media industry to go along with it, they'll just sue him silly. So he has to go along with it. But I, you know, bravo to him for stepping forth like that. Because there's a lot of pressure not to do that. You know, everybody's kind of on the DRM bandwagon big time. You look at Vista. It's DRM through the whole operating system at the hardware level. So speaking of Vista, Windows Vista users and Linux users have something in common now. They get to share in the hassles of not having hardware drivers available or only partially available. So, you know, in Linux, the frustration has been that, you know, vendors don't want to make the drivers for a free operating system. What's right. Their motivation to do it? Blah, blah, blah. And then the open source people say, well, tell you what, you don't have to make the drivers. Just open up your specifications. You know, just tell us what the specs are. We'll write the drivers for you. Some do it, some don't. It varies. Well, unfortunately, with Vista's new requirements, we went over that whole, you know, I have a whole show on the website for download about the Vista content protection. You were there for that. And the requirements to meet the media industry's requirements for new drivers for hardware and software and everything. The drivers aren't working. NVIDIA's video cards are not working under Vista. Some of the latest video cards that said Windows, let's see, what is it? It's right on here. Windows Vista capable, right? They're turning out not to be. And in fact, there's lawsuit. There's 1,300 people on a signature so far for a class action suit against NVIDIA for saying that this would be compatible, and it's not. And it's happening with vendors across the board that the new requirements that Microsoft has laid out, we don't have any driver support for. So the open source community has stepped up to the vendors. The vendors are saying, you know what? There's just too much. We don't have the resources to do everything that Microsoft's telling us to do for all these restrictions and make these drivers work. And they're all, and the drivers that are coming out are beta quality. They're buggy. They're only partially functional. So the open source community is saying, hey, just open up your specifications and we'll write the drivers for you. We'll be glad to do it if you'll just open up your specifications. But Microsoft's Vista specification says, do not open up your specifications. It is verboten. It is forbidden to do that. They think that violates the security approach for the content protection. So it's going to be interesting to see how this sorts out. But there's literally class action lawsuits starting now because of how many drivers are just not available under Vista that work under XP but do not work under Vista. Hmm. I have a couple of friends I talked to recently. One of them in particular, he was gung-ho about Vista. You know, he's not a super Windows fan. He uses Linux as well, but he's out there. He has to support it, so he got Vista on there to learn it. And after 12 attempts to try to get it to stabilize, he's rolled it back to XP. He's tried several different video cards, and he just cannot get it to stabilize with the different drivers. He ordered the system from a manufacturer. That didn't work. He went back and forth two or three times, got rid of it, went and built his own system based on what's supposedly be compatible, and he's had nothing but headaches too. So he's been very frustrated with it. Well, now that's not the case for everybody. That's to be sure. I'm also reading about, you know, like I can get Vista on this laptop here and stuff if I want. There's different versions of Vista, and some of them are disabled functionality. Like if you order the upgrade that you're supposed to get for free within that window, if you read the fine print, it says this does not include X functionality. There's a bunch of functionality that is not included in that free upgrade. Mm. And so that's something to be aware of, that there are, you know, a minimum of three levels, but there's really four levels because of the upgrade being different as well. So, you know, if they'd open up the specifications, they'd have tens of thousands of developers to help with the driver development. The driver development would get caught up very quickly, and it would be so much easier than trying to reverse engineer it the way they've had to. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But you Vista users out there who are experiencing the frustration of partial drivers and incomplete drivers and lack of driver availability, now you know what we feel like. We use Linux. Because that's the number one complaint is, like, you know, and some vendors have hopped on board. They've been getting more and more supportive because I think they're seeing the writing on the wall. But others are, you know, have their heads in the sand or just not willing to take a chance. And it saves, you know, you were asking about, well, why would a company go open source? You were asking about that in one of the previous shows. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a perfect example. Here you have tens of thousands of experienced developers ready to write code for you. You don't have to pay them a dime. They will write your drivers for you. They will support it. They will update it. They will fix the bugs. And you know, may just need a couple of head developers or something to just kind of keep tabs on it and kind of guide from time to time. But you don't have to sit there and manage a whole team yourself. What a great opportunity that is. So that way you can focus on your core business of coming out with great new product, with new functionality and new features, and getting it out there, and then let the developers take care of fixing the back end of that. What a great offer that is. And that article specifically says the open source community has told NVIDIA, hey, we'll do it for you. We'll write these drivers for you. We're not talking just for Linux. We're talking across the board. They'd be happy to do it.
Would that expose confidential information?
So that's Microsoft's argument is like, well, that will invalidate the content protection scheme that they're trying to make a specification as required by the RIAA and the MPAA, the Recording Industry and Motion Picture Association agencies. So that's the catch-22 they're in now. They're like, oh, we'd love to have all these developers, but we can't do it because the specification we are mandating says you can't open up your specifications. So I don't know what they're going to do. And so meanwhile, NVIDIA is in trouble and has class action lawsuits starting to be filed, 1,300 signatures so far. So we'll see where that goes. And it may just fizzle down. They may get caught up, and it may just be the pain of, you know, transitioning to a new operating system, which we always go through. But something to be aware of. Any comments, questions about that?
I was just curious about Jobs. Is that him just looking out for himself?
Steve Jobs?
Yeah. I mean, with the digital rights management argument.
Well, I think he sees that Apple would make even more money with iTunes without the DRM, because the DRM costs them a fortune in support costs because of the limitations and the bugs that happen that limit what you can copy it to and how you can copy it to and what products you can run it on. Right. He would much rather open it up to everybody and just get paid by the download.
Well, right. That makes sense for him.
Yeah. But
do you think it's because maybe he's behind the curve on digital rights management hardware?
No, they're ahead. They have a more user-friendly system than just about anybody else out there. Because you can copy it X amount of times. And, I mean, people are willing to live with the inconvenience of DRM to the level that Apple has set it to. The RIAA wants it to be more restrictive, but they've reached a balance that for now has worked. But Jobs is saying, you know what, we'd make so much more money if you would just get rid of this DRM thing.
He would.
Well, he would, but he's saying by proxy, so with the Recording Industry Association, because then that opens it up that they get more downloads, period. That people are overall... See, here's the thing. Some people assume everybody is criminal in nature. Other people assume that everybody is good in nature. Jobs is making the argument that people are inherently good in nature. There are a percentage of people that no matter what you do, they're gonna go out of the way to commit crime. And there's people in between who, you know, the little devil on their shoulder wins more often than not. But for the most part, if it's only a buck to download it and it's your favorite song, you're more likely to do that just because you don't want the guilt and you don't want to feel bad about it, factor.
We're talking teenagers primarily here, aren't we?
My wife's 30 and she's doing this. Yeah. She downloads. She doesn't do iTunes because we don't support the DRM stuff. But she will buy music stuff, and she's 30 years old. You know, she might be reliving another teenagerhood. I don't know, but she's probably not listening.
But the bulk of the audience are the buying public for.
I think it's like 14 to 28 or something like. But I don't know my age group. I'm 36, and we're all in that kind of sweet spot of people who have the money. You and I have more. We're not as much as seniors, but we have more of expendable income than your typical like starving student.
Yeah.
You know, and yet they still manage to spend an awful lot on music.
Well, and copy a lot.
Well, that's something else. There is still that, but his argument is, yes, they'll be copying, but you will still make even more money now than with the digital rights management, because the copying's still going to go on anyway.
Yeah.
And the Recording Industry Association of America is saying, you're out of your mind. People are evil. They will steal. If they don't have to pay, they won't pay. That is their premise. So whereas Jobs is trying to be more on the side, people are inherently good, Recording Industry Association, American Motion Picture Association, may say, no, people are inherently evil and we have to control them. So we'll see how that plays out. And that ties into what I want to do for next week's show. I want to give a status report on the battle of the Motion Picture Association of America and Recording Industry Association of America versus the average Joe. Right? Where are we at? Because there's been lawsuits now back and forth. See, initially, it was all lawsuits against the average Joe. But we've been having countersuits against them, and they've been starting to lose some of them. The media industry's been starting to lose some. So I'd love to do I'm planning to do a status report on that for next week if I can get it all together. It's a lot of information. The other one, there's two others. So another one related to this, Viacom orders YouTube. I think people have already heard about this in the news. There were 100,000 videos they made YouTube take down from their website, saying it was in violation of, it was Viacom content. Turns out the software Viacom used had a bug that it actually tagged a bunch of videos that were not in violation. They were somebody else's property, not Viacom's, and they were able to, now they're trying to put them back up and stuff, but it's a mess. And then this last one is funny. This is under Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA. Electric slide on slippery DMCA slope. Kyle Makulis, an engineer at San Francisco's Linden Lab, said he received a DMCA takedown notice about a video he had shot at a recent convention showing three people doing the electric slide. The creator of the electric slide claims to hold a copyright on the dance from the 1970s we're talking about here, and told him, and he's been filing lawsuits or DMCA copyright violations against websites all over. So over to the electric slide because people were doing it. He says the dancers are in violation because they didn't pay him for the right to do the electric slide, and that he videotaped it without copyright permission. I kid you not. That's really going on. All right. We are out of time, unfortunately. Oh, man. There's just so much going on.
Yeah. Crazy.
I hope that was informative, though. I mean, it was mostly, it was kind of fast-paced. I hope it wasn't too fast for everybody to keep up. Sunday, I'll do another just short headline thing, you know, 6 o'clock to about 6:20. Just a few headlines, some of the latest things. Next week is I'm going to do the status on where the recording industry and motion picture industries are at with our privacy and our rights to copyright. You know, we have a right to back things up. We're had, and that's been complicated. So I'll try to do that. Meanwhile, we have to wrap it up. I'll be back again next Friday from noon to 1. You can download archives of the show at techtalkhawk.com. That's techtalkhawke.com. And meanwhile, it's going to be Science Radio taking over the airwaves here in just a minute. Listening to 89.9, also FM 92.3, www.kyrs.org, Thin Air Community Radio, 509-747-3807, KYRSLP, Spokane.
KYRSLP, Spokane.
KYRSLP, FM, Spokane.
This is Angela, your host for Topics of Our Times, a public affairs program featuring lectures, speeches, and interviews by progressive thinkers, activists, and commentators, both past and present. Topics of Our Times is committed to giving voice to those underrepresented, overlooked, or otherwise disregarded by corporate media. Some of the voices you will hear will include Michael Parente, Howard Zinn, Noam Chomsky, Amy Goodman, as well as many local leaders. So tune in Saturdays from 4 to 5, right here on KYRS Thin Air Radio. Thank you.
Hello, welcome to Science Radio. It is 1:07 now. We started a little late today. Let's see. Albert, news for today.
News for today?
Yes.
We have Lucene on?
Yes, Lucene, the electronic Lucene. Artist based in Seattle. Lucene is on the air right now. He's on the telephone. We're going to have to try to figure this thing out again. Hello, Jeff? Are you on? Hello? Oh, man.
Hello?
Hello?
Is he on?
Yeah, I hear him.
I can't. Okay, sorry.
Okay, so how are you today, Mr. Lucene Jeff McIlwain? You hear him? You hear him?
No, I don't hear him. I like the music in the background. It's very fitting.
Hello?
Yes?
Well, is he coming through the speakers?
Yeah, I can hear him.
What's that?
Yeah, I hear
okay.
him.
Okay. Sorry, we're having difficulties with our telephone.
Oh, okay.
All right, so we've got some questions for you.
Uh-huh.
First, I would like to say we're actually playing him right now. So, what do you have to say? We're featuring Serial Hodgepodge as our album of the week. Do you have anything you'd like to say about that album?
I worked on that a long time ago.
Okay. So, where are you originally from?
I can barely hear you in the distance there.
Oh.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear him now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, where are you originally from?
I can still hardly hear you, but I think you're asking me where I'm from.
Yeah.
I grew up in Texas.
Okay. And you currently live in Seattle?
Yeah.
I found out something really interesting. Where did you get your education?
Well, I originally went to University of Texas, but then I went to CalArts for graduate school, outside of LA.
Yeah, because CalArts, people associate it with film and animation, so what did you major there?
Well, it was a program called New Media Composition, which is kind of focusing on music as it pertains to new media. Lots of, electronic music and computer programming and just kind of a combination of things.
Okay. When did you start making music seriously?
Probably about 10 years ago.
What are the steps that you take when you create a song that's a finished product?
Well, it's usually kind of a lot of noodling around for a while. I usually don't really figure out what I'm doing until I'm about halfway through it.
Okay.
I have a question.
Okay. I actually had the opportunity to see you in Seattle at Bumbershoot, and I noticed, and I actually heard that someone asked you this in a previous interview, a lot of your stuff, it seems like you can just pack it all up in a backpack and be gone. You don't have, a huge amount of equipment with
right.
you.
Right.
So, how much is, played through a computer and how much is created live?
You mean when I'm doing a live set?
Yes.
Well, I use the program Ableton Live, and so it's kind of a combination of audio with plugins and, automated plugins and, triggering various samples and, sequences within the song. So it's kind of like a hybrid of live and loops and I don't know if you're familiar with the software at all.
Yeah, Ableton a little bit. Yeah.
Behind it.
We're listening to Ask You, and I'm pretty curious. Who's the woman singing in the background in the very beginning?
This is a friend of mine in Seattle that just kind of agreed to work with me. Her name is Zoe.
Mm.
And yeah, she just kind of sang some layers of vocals for me, and I was able to kind of, you know, form them around the music.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because she has a very beautiful voice.
Uh-huh.
So, let's see. Oh, you are co-scoring a film. What's the film, and what can we expect music-wise?
Well, this is something that we worked on over the summer. It's a friend of mine, David Wingo, and I that both scored this film. It's called Snow Angels, and it just played at Sundance a couple of weeks ago. Not sure when it's going to be out in theaters, but I would expect, you know, maybe summer or next fall.
Okay. Who are your influences?
Well, I have so many influences, it's kind of hard to sort of narrow that down.
Okay. Okay. well, you're having an album. It's remixes. It's called Podulism.
Uh-huh.
What can we expect from that, and when will it come out?
Well, it's going to come out in March, and it has a lot of, like, kind of various styles on it, like, similar to the album. Matthew Deere, Robag Worm, John Tejada, Apparat, my friend Ben in L.A. goes by Deru. You know, so it's kind of jumping all over the map, and then I have a few remixes on there as well. My friend Doug Say did a video for me for one of the ambient tracks off Serial Hodgepodge, and that'll also be on that CD.
All right, interesting. I have one last question.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Also, okay, let's see. Would you ever, you know, be interested in playing live here in Spokane?
Sure.
Oh, that'd be very cool. We could get you a venue here, actually, at the radio station, the building
Yeah.
that it's in. So, yeah, if you're interested in that, I could
cool.
talk to you more about that later.
Yeah, I haven't really spent too much time in Spokane before. I've passed through it. It's an interesting town.
Yeah, it's interesting. Also, you're from Seattle, so have you been to the Bodies exhibit?
No, I haven't. It sounds interesting, though. I've always kind of been, either the Bodies exhibit or something very similar went through Berlin a few years back, and I just missed it. I was going to go there because I was in Berlin at the time, but I just missed it. It definitely seems like something that would be interesting, though.
Yeah, I know it's totally unrelated, but I was totally curious, huh? Anyway, thank you for your time.
Yeah,
and,
thank you.
I will, I guess, contact you a little bit more about playing here.
Cool.
So, all right, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Jeff McIlwain of Luzine, the electronic music artist. We're listening to him right now. His album, Serial Hodgepodge, is our album of the week. Oh, and yes, we have a webcam in the studio right now. You can view it at kyrs.org, and I believe on the left-hand column there's something about a webcam, so you can see me and Albert doing our thing here. That was Ask You. Up next is Locusts by Broadcast. This is Science Radio on KYRS. That was M83 with Run Into Flowers. Before that was Locus by Broadcast off of The Future Cran. And just before that was Ask You by Luzine. And thank you to Jeff McElwain again, also known as Luzine, for that little chat we had. If you have any questions, concerns, requests, you can call us down here at the station at 747-3807. And you can see this show, Science Radio's set list for this week and past weeks, at myspace.com/scienceradio, and in our blog section, we've got our set list. Up next is another Luzine song off our album of the week, Serial Hodgepodge, The Stop. This is Matmos, and by the way, that is the sound of liposuction. Enjoy. Science Radio is made possible in part by Boo Radley's, 12-time winner of the Inlander's Reader's Poll for Best Gifts. Located downtown across the street from the carousel, Boo Radley's carries a wide variety of toys, books, cards, and CDs. That was Matmost. Up next is Melt Banana.
Your thing, you're crazy, gonna lose a place by me.
That was Leaning In by the Blue States. Preceding that was Melt Banana, Matmos, and Luzine. Up next is another song by Luzine titled Make It Easy off of our album of the week, Serial Hodgepodge. Let's see, I'll have some Orange Crush, Silverstone Pickups, a little bit of Moby, and some more Luzine. And then my co-host Albert, who had to step out for a moment, will be taking over. And I feel like giving something away. So, you can get a free KYRS window sticker if you are the first one to call 747-3807.